Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi folks, I'm Jelaine Fenner and welcome to Strong Tower Radio with my co-host,
Tom Majure.
And Tom, we have a very interesting topic today, fire safety.
It's a very important subject.
It is. And, you know, we're in the holiday season, so we're thinking maybe a little bit more about fire safety because lots of things happen. But fire safety is very important year round.
That's for sure. And we have a wonderful expert. She can tell us a lot more, Kelly Ramsdale. And Kelly, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, Tom, why did you think this was important for us to cover this topic?
I tell you, fire safety, the holidays. I remember way back when in grade school, we had Fire Safety Week. And, you know, don't run those extension cords underneath the underneath the carpet. And if there was any time of the year that you would run the extension cord under the carpet, it would be at Christmas.
Yes, it is. And I know I've been thinking about that. I've been very guilty,
okay.
Especially at Christmas, because I like lights. Well, Tom, why don't you have a word of prayer before we talk to Kelly?
Absolutely. Our great Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you. You love us to have joy and happiness. You want us to be in good health. And you love celebrations, but Lord, in family and relationships. But Lord, we want to do this in a safe way. We want to protect our families. We want to protect our communities. Give us wisdom and direction. Guide us as we speak and help our listeners find something they can do to provide greater safety for their family and friends. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, Kelly, I have two questions. How long have you been doing this job? Because your title is, you're the Director of Public Education for the National Fire Protection Association. So that's one question. How long have you been doing it? And how did you get involved?
Well, I actually am fairly new as the director of NFPA. I've been there a little over a year and a half in this role. But I've been part of their staff for a little over 10 years, and I've been contracting with them for 17 years. Mm-hmm. I actually started in emergency services in 1994, so I just celebrated my 31st year. And I started as a worker in EMS, running EMS, and I was in college. And then that led me to the State Fire Marshal's Office in North Carolina, where I had the wonderful honor of leading North Carolina Safe Kids and being the Deputy Director of Prevention. And during that time, we made such a difference in North Carolina. But then it was like a billboard that the Lord opened up a door to come to the National Fire Protection Association. And I was very intentional about making sure that that was the right path for myself and also my family. And when I came there, it was like a billboard that the Lord put me in places to be able to make a difference. And so faith is a big part of my journey. I've always said that I would stay true to my faith and also be mindful that all of us have different gifts and talents. And this is certainly one where I can make a difference for people.
Well, amen. Thank you.
Wow. What a testimony. You know, you mentioned EMS, that you're literally, you've seen people get hurt. And so you're more sensitive to that, plus your love for people through your love for God, that commingles and propels you forward probably further than many others.
Absolutely. And I just am on the heels of last week, there was a World Burn Congress. And so we had about 800 burn survivors from all over the United States and the world that came together. And that organization, the Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, is actually headquartered there in Michigan. And wow. We have for about 23 years, my husband and I have volunteered to go alongside and help with that conference. And I tell you, every time I go there and I see the tragedy of fire, it just reinvigorates me for why we want to prevent anyone being burned or anybody losing a loved one or all of their belongings in a fire.
Wow. That's powerful. Tell us about the fire prevention Association. Tell us about the wonderful history that it has and the importance of improving safety for all of us.
Absolutely. Well, the NFPA, we've been around since 1896, and they're a self-funded not-for-profit, and their whole work is around preventing losses from fire and burn, and that's through information and knowledge and our passion. And so as part of this organization, we do public education, we help with code work, fire code work, and they're a wonderful organization that next year will celebrate 130 years. And it really serves an unmet need. People think that codes and standards are developed by the government, but they're actually created by safety organizations that can say the hard things to keep people safe. And so this year, we're actually doing a campaign called Don't Chance Safety. And as part of that campaign, we're educating the public on why there are so many codes and standards that protect you every day that you don't even think about. And so it's a wonderful organization. And as part of that history, Sparky the Fire Dog is our mascot. And next year, he'll celebrate 75 years. And he has been a beacon to children and families all over the world to kind of be fire safe and to help you learn in a really fun way. And so it's a very neat thing to be part of such a reputable organization that we're all about helping others.
So where does Sparky live?
Well, Sparky lives in the heart, just like Santa Claus in a lot of places. He lives in the heart of many fire departments. And so Sparky started in Boston, Massachusetts. That's where we're headquartered. But actually, we have Sparky that lives in fire departments all across this country. And he does have a website, which is sparky.org. And we'll talk about that a little later. But yes, Sparky's been around a long time, and he's looking good to be almost 75.
Well, that's good.
Well, I think that he's got a distant cousin there that's just a little bit older than him.
He does. So Smokey actually just turned, I think he turned 81. He's about 5 years older. And, you know, Smokey concentrates on safety in the forest, and we concentrate on safety in the home. And so we did a collaboration on his 80th birthday, and we talked about the fact that we need to be safe everywhere, whether it's in our home or in the forest, because we all can make a difference.
That's right. So let's talk about, especially this time of year with Christmas and, you know, Christmas trees and all kinds of things, what's one of the most common causes of home fires during the Christmas and holiday season?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Christmas Day is the second leading cause of cooking fires. They have more than almost any day. Of course, the number one day for cooking fires is going to be Thanksgiving. But unfortunately, the number two day is actually Christmas Day, followed by Christmas Eve. And so with that in mind, we want to make sure people are extra diligent about practicing good cooking practices. And that is, anytime you're really, really busy and preoccupied, it can be a recipe for disaster. And so we want to give people like some good information on how to cook safely. And really the biggest thing is to never leave cooking unattended. And that is, you know, we know you're busy, but you can prevent that by setting a timer. Always staying in the kitchen when you're doing anything like frying or grilling or broiling or boiling. And then always having a lid close by. And that is, if you don't have the lid that came with the pot, then you can keep a cookie sheet close by. So in the event that something goes awry, you would always have a lid that you could put over it and then turn the burner off. And that's really some of the common sense things you can do to keep yourself safe. The other thing is, as we accumulate more stuff, making sure that you don't have a lot of items that can catch fire near the stovetop. And then also, unfortunately, people don't use their ovens as much as they used to. And some people store stuff in them. So we want to make sure they check their ovens and their cooktops and remove anything that may be flammable to keep them safe.
Well, the other thing that's very important, I think you need to have a fire extinguisher somewhere in the house, and it should be, that's what I'm thinking, in the kitchen area is the best place for it. Is that correct?
Well, you know, we know that if you have a lid and you have a fire, it can work just as easy as trying to find your fire extinguisher and trying to use it. Now, if you've been trained on how to use fire extinguishers and you have it in a place that it's easy to grab, then yes, that might be something you can do. But when in doubt, we want you to get out. And that is, if you have a lid and you can put on it, do that. But if a fire is questionable, the fire department really wants you to get out, get your loved ones out, and call them to come. Because those precious minutes can make a real difference if you can't access that fire extinguisher quickly.
Well, that's, you know, good advice. And I know that it's good to have a fire extinguisher, but what you just said about being trained. I mean, it can be visible, but you need to know how to use it.
And absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times people may have a fire in their oven, and at first it's very unnerving if they see that. But there's really a easy way to make that go out, and that is to turn the heat off in the oven and to keep the door closed. If you were to open that door, you can actually introduce oxygen, and it can make that fire get bigger. But if you just leave that door closed, turn the heat off, it will actually naturally extinguish itself. And so it can prevent something from getting even worse just by keeping that door closed on that oven.
Well, that's a good point. And I hope our listeners are understanding that it's the oxygen that helps a fire to grow.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, keeping that door closed on an oven or just closing off any kind of pot. You would put an oven mitt on and you would just slide that over and then turn off the heat. We don't want you moving stuff, especially if you have grease in a pot and it were to ignite. We don't want you putting anything like baking soda or other things on it. We don't want you putting water. We just want you sliding a lid over it and it will put itself out, and also turning that burner off if you can safely do that.
Well, Tom, I'm going to tell you a little story about me.
Well, I got a story too, so you go first.
I was young, living at home, and probably a teenager. Anyways, going to make popcorn and put oil in the pan. That's the way I like it. And heat it up. I forgot to pay attention that's what I was doing and left the kitchen. And so, yes, we had a fire. Mostly it was smoke. It was not good, and had to have, you know, the place repainted, and it was just not good. And I did that twice. So it's very important. You're right. Like you said, you need to, if you're going to turn anything on in the kitchen for cooking, you need to stay there and pay attention to what you're doing.
So you're on the kitchen cooking surface. Our story is inside the oven. So I really appreciate that. Don't open up the
door.
Oven. It was a holiday. I don't know if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas. There was something in the oven. The grease went down in a grease fire. Boy, does that smell terrible.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, isn't that a natural reaction to open up the door to try to put the fire out?
It is. And on Black Friday last year, I ran into a gentleman in Lowe's Hardware, and he was buying a brand new oven and a fire extinguisher. And I said, "Sir, may I ask you why you're buying a fire extinguisher and an oven?" He said, "I actually had an oven fire, and I opened the door and used all of my fire extinguisher." Well, when he did that, it actually caused more damage because, you know, sometimes you can't clean that out and it gets all in the pieces and parts. And so it reminded me of why we need to give people good information on how, you know, a small fire will go out if you just leave the door closed and turn it off. And then you can have it inspected and make sure that it's still in working order. And many times you can continue using that because it minimized the damage.
You know, Jelaine, the advice we've just got here in the first 10, 15 minutes of this program is going to be a lifesaver for our audience. You know, literally, if we had multiple choice or rank the following of holiday risks, I would not have put cooking. Well, it wasn't on my original list. So this is so important. We have to raise the consciousness and that idea that Kelly has given us, that we have that lid close by. Just gently remove it. Don't get panicky. We're going to the fire. There's panic. I mean,
yes.
But turn down the heat. Do not open up the oven itself. these simple things will be of great help and probably save some people's lives.
That's right. So, well, let's talk about Christmas decorations, Christmas trees, lights. What's the number one problem there, Kelly?
Well, one is I did learn that Michigan has a huge Christmas tree population of all different types of trees there. I'm from North Carolina, and I thought we were the leader in our mountains, but I learned something new today that y'all actually have a lot of those. And I'll be honest, I love a fresh tree. And so if people are purchasing a Christmas tree, a live one, we want to make sure that they choose a tree that has fresh green needles that aren't falling off. You want to make sure that you cut the base of it, that you always water it daily and check that water. And then also when you're lighting it, making sure that you're using lights that have been lifted. And so that may be a new term for people, but actually, if you buy lights that have been listed, so it could be something like UL or ETL, it's going to be a round little safety stamp on the lights and on the packaging, then that means they've been tested for their quality. And a lot of times we want to make sure that you're checking those lights and making sure they don't have any broken places on them, that they're working properly. And that's an important step if you're using a fresh tree, is to always check the lights, even on an artificial tree, to make sure that those lights don't have any exposed wires, because that can cause issues. And really, that daily watering is super important. We don't want you to, you know, put that tree really close to a heater or a vent that'll dry it out. But it's certainly a festive part of the holiday, and I'm hoping I get my tree in the next couple of weeks so that I can set it up. I just love a fresh tree, but it's okay also to use artificial trees. They certainly have a lot of safety benefits.
So when you're talking about lights, I finally went to an artificial tree. I was sick of the needles falling, mm-hmm. but my lights are probably 20 years old. Is that a good thing or not?
Probably not. It's a good time because there's going to be sales coming up. But unfortunately, anything that you use, and also the storage of them, matters. So many times people will store their lights in the off season in attics, which get really hot, mm-hmm. and also in attics that can get really cold. And that can actually make the materials of those lights disintegrate. And so you always want to make sure that you're checking, one, that they work properly, also that they don't have any worn areas. But just like anything, some are designed for indoor use, some are designed for outdoor, but you need to actually inspect them and check them, because anything over time can wear out. And when you're using electricity, just natural attrition, but also environmental elements can affect that.
So I have a question. I've always thought if I buy, you know, indoor lights, I do not want to put them outside. But what about, you buy outdoor lights, it's not good to use them indoors? I don't know.
Well, some are for indoor and outdoor, but they usually are very specific. So there is a brand that says they can be used in either place. The one caveat to that would be if something says it's only for indoor use, that means it can't withstand the elements outside. So you do need to do a little bit of homework when you're looking for lights to make sure that you're placing them and that they have versatility.
Let me just explore that a little bit. If you bring your lights out that you've had for these multiple years and they crackle and crinkle, is that kind of an indication it might be their last season?
Maybe you don't use it.
That's
season.
What I was just thinking. You're right, Kelly. Yeah, give him good advice. It might be time to buy some new ones.
I just think, you know, another thing is that people love to hang lights. And when you hang them, we want to make sure that you're not using a staple gun or nails, because you can actually pierce those lights. So choose some of those really cool clips that exist and hang those lights so that it doesn't damage the string of lights.
So now then, let's talk about extension cords, or, you know, you have a string of lights, but you need like 10 string of lights. You know, how many lights is it okay to put together and to using the extension cords?
Well, you're going to always follow manufacturer's instructions, and that is with the different lights, it will tell you what the maximum amount you can string together. So we really don't want you being a Griswold and actually doing a whole lot of daisy chaining lights. There is a certain amount of lights that can be connected to each other, and really on the directions of the box and in the internal instructions, it'll tell you how many it allows. And that was a tip I didn't know until I started reading these instructions. So yes, you really have to read instructions. You also want to make sure that you're using an extension cord that has been listed. Unfortunately, cheaper is not better. And I will tell you that there are counterfeit products. And what that means is they haven't met the U.S. safety standards. So you want to spend the money to buy an extension cord that can be used for outdoor use or can be used internally for a small amount of time. And that's just it. An extension cord is temporary wiring. And that means you're using it for a finite amount of time, but they're not designed for long-term use. And so that is part of this education, is making sure that if you have to, you know, we started the show talking about extension cords under carpet. If you have something that actually you're having to run an extension cord 12 months out of the year, you really need to think about contacting an electrician or moving that so that you're not doing that long term, because it can really cause issues over time.
What about, you know, you mentioned about instructions. How many people keep the box and keep the instructions? Is there kind of a rule of thumb? We have it. One thing that has improved is that we're gradually moving over to LED lights, mm-hmm. so they take less electricity. They can be strung further. But if you don't have the instructions, what do you do? It might be a good idea to put a piece of tape or something on it that says this is six or four. This is a four-string light, and this is a six-string light. But give us some guidance, and how has things changed as we moved from incandescent to LED?
Yeah, so LED lights are designed to use less energy. They still are a strand of electricity, that whether they have a traditional light or the new ones. Now, the cool thing is on every strand of lights, there'll be a tag that tells you the brand. So if you lose those instructions, the beauty of it is they may give you the manufacturer that you can go online, and they will always publish that information along with it. So that's the beauty of it. The other thing that people take for granted is you really need to turn off lights and decorations before you leave home or go to bed. And that really flies against what we like to do. But unfortunately, having supervision is the best thing to do with these decorations. They are so beautiful and they make us feel so homey, but there is just a lot of fires that can happen from unattended things. And so always making sure that you have things on timers that have been listed so that they can come on and go off. And then always making sure that all of your decorations are turned off when you go to bed, because it's just not worth the risk.
So let's talk about candles, because lots of times we have, you know, candles, and this goes just for some of us that have wood stoves or fireplaces, that's, you know, it's a heat source too, but there's, what do we do about making sure that we don't, I mean, this is a flame.
Well, it is. And, you know, we always do a candlelight service at our church, and we've actually changed from traditional candles to flameless ones. And I would tell people that we have a lot of battery operated candles now. And the beauty of that is they look so beautiful, and they also give us that ambiance, but they don't have the risk with them. So there are safe ways to use candles, but you always want to make sure that you have them in a sturdy type of either jar or glass fixture. You always want to make sure that you're following the recommendations of those candles. So we have a whole candle safety tip sheet for both religious candles and candles in general. We always want to make sure that we aren't having children hold them, because one little tiny mistake or a drop or their clothes come in contact with it, and it can cause cause them to catch on fire. And so we would never want that. And so we always want to make sure that we use candles safely and think about some alternatives, which is using these flameless candles or battery operated. And I even use them for meals now. I have flameless candles and they are readily available all over the country at a really cheap price point that you can have and you use them time and time again.
I agree, because that's what I've got now are candles that you just can flip the switch and some of them have the light kind of flickers and
yeah. They're beautiful. They really are. They've come a long way, and we recommend those year-round. But even here at the holidays, those flameless candles, they use, even have little timers that you can push it and light all of them at one time, which is kind of cool.
And, you know, open flame safety all year round. My cousin at her wedding, she had her wedding veil on and she turned her back and it encountered a candle and lit her veil on fire. So I mean, life is dangerous.
It can be. Okay, so besides prevention, what can families do to be prepared if a fire occurs?
Well, I'll tell you, the number one tip we have for folks is please have working smoke alarms. That is the one item that is essential to your home safety. And that is, by having working smoke alarms, it gives you the short time that you may have if you have a home fire. And so having smoke alarms on each level of your home, having them inside and outside your bedrooms, and then also practicing your home escape plan. And that is, with the holidays coming, you may have friends and family that stay over that may not be usually there. And so it is super important that you have these hard conversations about, if we were to have a fire, here is our plan. And that plan includes your pets. And that is because people love their fur babies and we want to make sure that their pets are part of this evacuation. And, you know, pets add a whole bunch of joy to our families, but also we have to protect them from things that are hot, just like we do kids. And so we always want to keep in mind that for kids and pets, we have to take extra care when we're cooking, extra care around candles and other things in our homes that can injure them.
Okay. Well, if people have any questions, is there a website you have or a phone number that people can go online, or maybe if they really want to talk to somebody, can you share
that? Absolutely. So you can go to Sparky.org for kids and families. There's tons of activities at Sparky.org. We own that website, so you'll never get any ads or anything little eyes shouldn't see. And that's a fun way to include it. And then if you go to NFPA.org, when you go on there, we have safety tip sheets on every type of fire safety hazard. And so you can download those for free. We have free videos through YouTube. And our contact information is right there on the website. So feel free to, for every holiday and every season, to be able to grab really good information to keep you and your family safe.
Okay, so listeners, she said NFPA. That's for National Fire Protection Association. So that's NF, not SPA.org. That's your website.
And, of course, Sparky.org.
Well, yeah, I like the Sparky.org one, especially for kids. So one last thing. What is the most important thing you want to leave with our listeners?
We all play a role in keeping ourselves safe from fire. And we can all do it. It just takes a little time. It takes a little energy. But our goal is to help you live safely and to protect you and your loved ones so we can celebrate this wonderful holiday season.
Well, thank you. It's so good to talk to you, and we've learned a lot today. And I hope our listeners have listened and have learned things that maybe they knew but they didn't practice. That's me. And so we really appreciate everything you do, Kelly.
Thank you, and have a wonderful, blessed holiday season.
And we're looking forward to Sparky's birthday next year.
Yes, that's
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. Maybe we can talk about some new things for the spring when he celebrates his birthday in March.
Okay, well, God bless you.
Same to you. Have a wonderful Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Ruthie Calkins from Tustin. The Bible tells us that heaven will be the dwelling place of God's friends. That's why I'm so excited about supporting Strong Tower Radio. Their unique blend of thought-provoking speakers, stirring inspirational messages, and heartwarming music reaches into the lives and hearts of each listener, helping them to develop and cherish a friendship with God. If this radio station has been a blessing to you and your family, why not join me and hundreds of others in supporting Strong Tower Radio with a financial gift? They're 100% listener-supported and could really use your help right now. You can send your check to Strong Tower Radio, Post Office Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan 49601. Or you can visit their secure website to use your credit card at strongtowerradio.org. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hello, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio Today. I'm your host, Tom Majeur. We have full-blown winter here in the Michigan, not only in the Lower Peninsula, but of course, in the Upper Peninsula. Western Michigan got its about a lake effect already, too. Winter driving safety is now in effect. To help us out, we have Lieutenant Ashley Miller from the Michigan State Police to help us speed up our seasonal refresher course. Welcome, Lieutenant Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me.
She's the public information officer for the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. And thank you so much for being a part of our show.
No, this is great. Thank you for inviting me.
Let us pause for a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we ask for safety on the roads whenever we travel, but there's also a part that we can play. Lord, help us to be wise stewards of our vehicles and of ourselves and others. Give us wisdom so that we can be better drivers. Be with us and help us to communicate those messages clearly and concisely. In Jesus' name, amen. Lieutenant, how is the driving out there?
Well, today the roads are fine for the most part, but I know last week they were a little dicey, especially in the Gaylor area.
And we're going to be broadcasting this on Christmas week, so weather conditions can change.
Absolutely, especially in the upcoming weeks.
Wow, we have some of our listeners have quite a bit of a winter driving experience already under their belt.
I know people in the UP, they have definitely been hit with a lot of snow, and then recently downstate, a lot of ice is what I've been hearing.
You know, sometimes it's good to get your feet a little bit wet, if I could use that expression, and then you're ready to listen a little bit closer. You've had a couple slippery incidences, and maybe we could do a little bit better.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm here today, is just to discuss some important safety tips for drivers to remember during these winter months.
What is the first thing that hopefully we've already done, but if we haven't, we can do some remedial work winterizing our cars?
Yes, that's extremely important. That should be done in the fall just to gear up for our snowy conditions. But obviously, having a well-maintained vehicle is a safe car. So you want to make sure that you have the mechanic look at all, check all your fluid levels, like your oil, your winter wiper fluid or antifreeze, and make sure that you have items in your car that are in good working order, such as maybe batteries, your ignition system, lights, brakes, heater and defrost, that's a big one, and your wipers. Make sure you have working wipers or new wipers to make sure that you get that ice and snow off your windshield.
Oh, so many things to think about here. Oh, I tell you, the wipers, you know, they encourage us. In our first section, we talked about fire safety during the holidays. You know, replacing those smoke alarms in that particular segment is a preparation, doing it maybe at the time change just to remind you. But
before that first snow falls, you know, I'm thinking back at my vehicles, and I need to replace those wiper blades.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's not something that I typically think about on a regular basis, but it's one of the most important besides your tires. Right? Your windshield wipers are very, very important to make sure that you can see when you're on the roadway.
And they're kind of put to the test when you have when you have road salt up on your windshield, that just compounds. That's not just normal water. You have another element.
Absolutely. Especially when ice freezes to the wipers, that makes it extremely difficult to clear your windshield and have good visibility. So you have to make sure that you stay on top of making sure that that ice is not built up on your wipers.
And, you know, I think about one of my vehicles that we got away with those wipers this fall, but they're a little bit deformed. They're a little bit not as flexible, or so they're not wiping. They may even skip across the window, and boy, we've got you've got precipitation falling down again, the road salt coming up on the road. You need every advantage you can get.
Absolutely. The fastest way to clear a window, and I really wasn't aware of this after I started doing a little bit of research on the best way to clear your windshield. And I just wanted to share with the listeners kind of what I gathered during this research, because I think it might help someone. So, like, the first thing, obviously, is you turn your fan on the highest setting.
Correct.
And then set your temperature to the hottest setting.
That's what we do.
And make sure your dial is on the defrost setting. But what I didn't know is to switch on the air conditioner, which did not really make sense to me when I was reading it, but it sounds odd, but it actually helps remove the moisture in the air. And that's something I didn't know. So that's a fun tip to share with the listeners today. And making sure that air recirculation switches off too, this will reduce like the fogging of the windows. How frustrating that can be when you're trying to drive down the road and everything fogs up. But also another fun fact is removing the snow and ice from your shoes before you actually get into your vehicle can also help reduce the fogging.
Wow.
And that's something I didn't know either. So that I thought was a fun tip to share.
Did you also ever notice that if you get in a cold car and you've just washed your hair, you're putting moisture into the air too?
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about it that way.
So don't wash your hair before you go. But also, does it make a difference if you store your vehicle outdoors or indoors?
Obviously, the outdoors is going to be more difficult and take longer to thaw. So it's always ideal to store your vehicle inside the garage, but obviously some people just don't have that capability. So,
absolutely. You talked about fluid levels. I took one of my vehicles out to do something, and the low coolant popped up. So apparently I didn't do that one either.
Oh, no.
This is confession time here.
Right.
Okay, tires make a difference, and you've got quite a bit to say here. There's three different types of tires.
There are, and as I was doing my research, and I actually spoke to one of our drive track instructors who he teaches our civilian winter driving course to the citizens here in Michigan, which there's a long wait list, but it is a phenomenal course if anyone ever has the interest of doing that, traveling down to Lansing. But yeah, so there are three types of tires. So summer tires, which are really made for the warm weather and really are not designed to be used below freezing temperatures or driving on snow or ice. And then all season tires can handle a variety of road conditions that are very limited when it comes to snow and ice. So really, during the winter time, you should change your tires out to winter tires because they have a softer rubber compound compared to like the summer all season tires with small cuts of tread. So this gives a better grip on the road, which makes it the safest for driving in the winter.
And it really makes a difference. I saw here that you can stop 50% faster on snow and ice with winter tires. Sometimes that's the safety factor you need.
Yeah, that's the key. And like, if you think of 50% faster, that's equivalent to stopping 2 to 3 car lengths sooner. So that's a big difference.
Sometimes that's the difference between an accident and not an accident.
Absolutely.
Now, tire rotation is pretty important too, and some of us also are a little lax on that.
Yes. You know, and I have been guilty in my younger years of really not paying much attention to the tire rotation portion of the vehicle maintenance. But it's very important that you are rotating your tires every 5,000 to 8,000 miles. So there's an even tread on all the tires, and you know, you get the longest use out of your tires, I would say.
Right. But if it's, and I had to think about it a while, but it makes sense that if your tires are wearing unevenly, you are not grabbing the road surface, your traction is not even across that tire, and that is adding a risk factor.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
So how should we drive on ice and snow?
Well, before we get into driving, there's another fun fact that I have never done, but I'm going to do as soon as the snow is off my tires.
Okay.
But it's called the penny test. So, if you don't know if you have enough tread on your tires or if you should be changing your tires, you insert a penny with Lincoln's head down into the tread of your tire, and if you can see Abe's entire head, then there's not enough tread left to drive safely on the roadway.
Oh.
So that's easy, that anyone could do. If you have a penny, you can check your tire tread at any time. And if you have a question, just go to your mechanic's shop and they'll be able to tell you.
Absolutely. Well, as far as driving on ice and snow, some of us have been here most of our lives. what's new? I mean, it comes every year.
It does, and we can learn something new every year. But before we get into the actual how, I just want to share with our listeners the statistics from 2023 to 2024, because it is eye-opening. So there were 22,713 winter weather-related crashes during the winter months of 2023 to 2024, and that includes 36 fatalities. So as I start getting into explaining how to drive on these roadways, how many of those crashes could have been avoided if people paid attention and slowed down? Because really, speed and distracted driving were leading causes of crashes. So, and I'll tell you the story before we even get into the nitty-gritty of driving. People always complain, well, it's the weather. Like, the weather caused this crash. Well, it is... Letters don't cause crashes, people do. And even if you are the most experienced drivers, like, you can crash. So a couple years ago, I was driving in the winter and I was driving well below the speed limit. However, it was too fast because as I approached the stop sign, I slammed on the brakes, which you should not do. And I slid through the stop sign and struck a car.
Mm.
And so here I am in a crash. Thankfully, no one was hurt. It was very, very minor because I was going so slow. But even in the slowest of speeds, sometimes your reaction in stopping is just not there. You have to pay attention and drive within your limits. And I wasn't that day. So as we get into these tips, just know that crashes can happen to anyone. So we just have to make sure that we are paying attention and driving slow and not blaming the weather for crashes, because truly drivers cause crashes. So let's get into the nitty gritty of this. So it takes 10 times longer to stop your vehicle on snowy or icy roads. So you really need to slow your speed down and allow more room between your vehicle and the vehicle ahead of you. This gives you more time to react and brake. So if you're following someone too closely, there's a chance you are going to rear end them. You know, turn on your blinker sooner, because then that gives the driver behind you more time to react and stop. You know, that's common courtesy, because if it's icy and you last minute stop and turn, that could cause a problem. You know, and watching for black ice, you know, which it looks like just wet pavement, but that's another reason to slow down. At any time, you can hit that black ice. It could spin you into a skid or into the ditch or into another vehicle. Remember, I kind of touched on earlier, like avoiding distractions. So put your phone away. That's the number one distraction. But try not to multitask. So even setting your radio station or your GPS, if you still use it, like doing all that before you leave your driveway is extremely important. So you're not fumbling around when you're trying to drive. If you're on a roadway, you can control yourself. So you need to be fully involved in the process of driving. So scanning, looking ahead, and making sure that you're seatbelt on and you're following the speed limit. So that's the only task you should be doing when you're behind the wheel.
So you definitely need full focus. You can get away with it this past fall, but now's not the time. I mean, you probably shouldn't be doing it anyway, but now's the time. No distraction, zero distraction. Yes. You know, we had a 3 or 4 inch snowfall this week, and I was going down a back road. I don't think it had been plowed yet. And I was going as fast as I was comfortable. A pickup came up behind me. I even hurried up a little bit so he wouldn't pass me, but that wasn't enough for him. He still had to gun it and pass me in that situation. It's just not wise. It doesn't matter if you've got four-wheel drive. There's limitations.
And funny you should mention four-wheel drive, because people always think that. And honestly, I kind of thought that too. Like, oh, I have four-wheel drive, I'm totally fine. Well, four-wheel drive, it's okay, so your vehicle's less likely to flip during acceleration. But it's still just as difficult to stop and turn on wintry roads with a rear-wheel drive vehicle. So the answer is to slow down. Don't be in a hurry.
Now, there's no advantage with four-wheel drive except for traction. As far as stopping distance, you are in the same game. You have no advantage.
Yes.
So, you know, there was 22,000 crashes in 23-24. Winter. What happens if you're involved in a crash?
Well, for some people, I get this a lot. So people are in a crash and they get issued a speeding ticket, but they were traveling below the posted speed limit. So I get this question a lot. Well, how did I get a ticket? I was not speeding. But if you're involved in a crash, like, you have to, so the law, Michigan law states, and it's a violation of the basic speed law, that drivers are required to move at a speed that's reasonable and proper for the road conditions. Even if they're driving at or below the speed limit, you could receive a speeding ticket because the road conditions. The speed was unreasonable for safe driving. And same goes for if someone rear-ended a vehicle. Like, a lot of people, they ask that question if they, like, go in the ditch, so there's no other car around or no one else involved. Like, why did I get a ticket? Just a verbal warning. Well, you're required to keep your vehicle on the roadway no matter what, whether it's rain, snow. Like, you have to drive reasonable and proper. And same with rear-ending a car. You have to be able to stop within assured clear distance of the vehicle in front of you. So you need to make sure that you're slowing down well below the posted speed limit, especially in the wintertime. And if you are involved in a crash, report it immediately. You need to call, and the best way to do that is calling 911. People say, well, it's not an emergency. No one was hurt. So I didn't really want to bother them. Well, you need to bother them because that's the way police officers are dispatched, different calls for service. Even if it's a car versus deer, a lot of people don't want to report that because they don't think it's a big deal and they will just drive or report it later. They are still required to report that. And that's a violation. You can be written a citation. It's actually a misdemeanor to not report traffic crashes immediately. So at least at minimum, call 911, report your location, injuries, the vehicles involved with license plates, as much information to help the police officers as possible. And make sure if you are in your vehicle, wear your seatbelt, because you never know if you're going to be hit by another vehicle driving. Police officers have been hit on traffic stops before, and we're always taught to just wear your seatbelt when you're in the car. So that's extremely important.
Absolutely.
So just reporting that immediately is my biggest advice.
And let me just tag on to stay in your vehicle as much as possible and have your safety belt, even though you're stationary in a ditch. One of my the students, I was in Grand Rapids, and it was a snowy, icy day. It wasn't my student. It was another department's, and he was ready to graduate. He had completed all the requirements, and there was an accident on 96 just west of Grand Rapids. Multiple cars hit the same patch and went in the ditch. He was out there talking and helping people, and he got hit and killed. So it's real. You have to be in a safe condition, because if there's a condition that cars lose, there will be multiple possibilities of that reoccurring.
You're spot on. That's totally accurate.
What about driving near safely around snowplows?
Oh, yeah, snowplows. I know that everyone, you know, it's inconvenient to be behind a snowplow, but it's very needed because, you know, they clear the road for us. So make sure that if you're traveling near or like behind a snowplow, that you are at least 200 feet, approximately 6 car lengths behind the plow truck. And so that's a long way, but you know, those trucks stop. And they turn, and you never know, like, which way they're going to go because you don't know the route. So it's just great to, you know, leave that distance so you are able to stop. Because the last thing you want to do is be in a crash involving a snowplow, because they are heavy. And did you know that they can weigh up to 30 tons? And the average passenger car weighs around 2 tons. So it would not be in your favor to be involved in a crash with a plow truck because they're so big. And then another fun fact that I want people to know is, and do you know this? Are you allowed to pass a snowplow? Do you know the answer to this question?
In some circumstances, you cannot. One thing I learned by by preparing for this program and the notes you gave us is do not pass on the right. And there's a good reason for that. Is that's where the discharge of the snow is going. So not a good idea. So, but you also need to assess the conditions. And what if that other lane is not clear yet? It's probably you're on a, you know, interstate, and they're cleaning the right lane. The left lane is not safely passage. I would think that would get you in trouble, especially if you lost control.
Yeah, so it's okay to pass on the left, but again, if they're plowing the right lane, that left lane probably has not been plowed. So you are risking, you know, accelerating and possibly crashing to pass this plow truck. So I know it is inconvenient, and you are right. You cannot, it is against the law to pass on the right-hand side, especially on a two-lane road. A plow truck, but you really should just, for a number of reasons, stay behind. I know it will take you longer to get to your destination, but they're plowing that road for you. So you'll have a freshly plowed lane if you just stay behind the plow truck. And also, and maybe people don't know this, but Michigan's move over law. So the snowplow actually is considered an authorized vehicle for purposes of that law. So if you see a stationary snowplow on the side of the road, you must slow down to at least 10 miles an hour slower than the speed limit and move over to the open lane if possible. If that's not possible, you need to slow down and pass, allowing as much room as possible for that snowplow.
Yes, and you know, going back to following too close to a snowplow, they are possibly dropping salt, and especially if it's a fresh salt, it has sharp edges, crystal edges on it, and you could have a chip in your windshield if not start a break. So,
you're totally right. I actually didn't even think about hitting on that, but you're absolutely right.
Let's talk about road conditions. Our half an hour is going very fleetingly, but let's talk about, do you call the Michigan State Police?
I know. Well, everyone likes to do that because we have a lot of knowledge about a lot of things. But if you would like road conditions, please don't call the MSP Post because they're obviously inside and they may not know the road conditions on the freeway. So it's best to go to www.michigan.gov/drives, and you'll be able to see the cameras at different locations. So you can actually see the roadway. You can see the plow truck route. There's a lot of information on that site. So I just would direct everyone to that michigan.gov website.
Absolutely. Wow. What do you have any last-minute thoughts for us as we close out this program on winter driving safety?
I do have one last thought. It's not necessarily driving, but I always like to remind parents of bundling up your little kiddos. Please don't put them in heavy coats and car seats. Number one, it's extremely hot for them, and those straps will not fit tightly as they should. So it's not going to protect them as well as if you were to dress them in layers, so that seatbelt will fit properly, that harness will fit properly on their chest. And also remember the seatbelt laws. Infant to 2 years old, they must be in the back seat in a rear facing seat. If you're 2 to 5 years old, then the child can move to a forward facing seat until they reach that maximum height and weight allowed by the car seat manufacturer. Or if the child is 5 years old, and these laws just came into effect last April of this year. And then if the child is 5 to 8, then the child can move to a belt positioning booster seat in the back seat until they reach 4'9" or 8 years old. And then this is the big one. All children under 13 must remain in the back seat. I see a lot of kiddos, young kiddos in the front seat, and that is not safe if there's an airbag deployment.
That's the reason. Well, Lieutenant, thank you so much. This is, we've been talking to Lieutenant Ashley Miller. She's a public information officer for the Michigan State Police Office. Thank you for being a part of our program.
Thank you so much for the invite. This was great.
We promise we're going to drive safer now.
Good. Me too.
We've been listening to Strong Tower Radio. That concludes our program from this week. We've talked about fire safety during the holidays and now about winter safety. I ask that you be safe and be blessed. And for Strong Tower Radio, I'm Tom Majeure. Bye now.